This morning, we successfully covered the Mangala Charana section of Tattva Sandarbha. Congratulate yourselves, we finished. And now we're going to begin the next section, which has a couple of different parts. If you have your handout, we'll call it the handout, on pages 2 and 3, it gives an overview of how we're going to be breaking down the sections and subsections of Tattva Sandarbha. So we finished section 1. Now we're going to begin section 2, which reads, Establishing Srimad Bhagavatam as the supremely authoritative source of knowledge, and it has some subsections, as you see. So we're going to be discussing subsection A, the Vedic literatures are the best evidence. Now, just a second here. During the break after the morning session, one of the interactions with someone attending the morning session shared, I'm a new person and this seems like not exactly meant for new persons. So, just a little sharing with you. A few devotees over the period of time, a few years, said, not in a complaining way, but kind of like an encouraging way, we understand, or I understand, that many times with public speaking, it's new people. So you have to speak something that's relatable to new people. So it's introductory and introductory and introductory and introductory. And introductory is nice. But every now and then, can you do something that's beyond introductory? And you know, we can go a little more deeply into a subject matter, please. Every now and then. So I heard that a few times and it registered. And so I thought, okay, well, once a year, I'll do that. And I'll pick topics that are, well, Krishna Consciousness 201. Not 101. And if somebody's new, just like if there's somebody new in the audience and, you know, you haven't finished 101 yet, and we're already at 201, it's not that this isn't meant for you. I shared with this person, just like your children. Do you sometimes share something with your children that they don't quite understand, but you share it with them anyway? And she smiled and said, yeah, I understand. Now I understand what you're saying. So if you first you don't understand, then it's okay. It's exactly what Prabhupada said to us when reading Nectar Devotion. He was getting all these letters. What does this mean and that mean? So he just wrote a very simple explanation. If at first you don't understand, read it again. And then if after reading again you don't understand, then read it again. And then, if you still don't understand, continue reading again and again and eventually you understand. So now, based on that question this morning, I was thinking, I should have said this right at the very beginning, because I certainly did that with Brahma Samhita, a book that I've always wanted to go more deeply in, but it was forbidding. In part, you know, the language of Bhaktisiddhanta is, you need a dictionary every third word. And even when you have a dictionary, it's, you know, not the normal way that people use words, so it's puzzling. But after reading it again and reading it again and reading it again, and kind of like osmosis, it kindly went in. And then I tried, as we're going to see it again, you know, the nature of a sandarbha, it's complex subject matter, easily understandable, which is a contradiction. Because complex subject matter is not easily understandable. But to make it easily understandable really requires that you deeply understand it, because otherwise it remains complex without it. Anyway, so this is Krishna Consciousness 201, and if you don't understand it, that's okay. Just continue to hear. And one of the things, if you've read Srila Prabhupada's books reasonably, what to speak of, you read them regularly, you'll notice the following. Srila Prabhupada has presented these understandings to us already. He just pablamized them. What's pablum? Baby food. You take apples and you make it into puree. And it becomes baby pablum. And because babies don't have strong power of digestion, they can take one spoonful at a time and they can digest it, and it's digestible. Srila Prabhupada did that. He made baby food out of very high philosophy. And Jiva Goswami is similarly taking this subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam and making it his audience is not 101 folks. His audience isn't even exactly us. His audience is the scholars of his time. And the scholars of his time, well, put it this way, there are not scholars today like the scholars of his time. The scholars today are like children compared to the scholars of before. What to speak of us? We're not scholars of today. But that was his audience. And he, we'll see in just a few minutes, he wanted to present in a comprehensive and systematic way the doctrine or the teachings, the treatise of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teach? What's the message? In a A to Z, completely comprehensive way. Not little pieces here, little pieces there. The whole thing. That's a lot. The whole thing is a lot. And it's in the Bhagavatam, so it's the messages of the Bhagavatam according to subject matter. Okay. So now we're take notes. Many of you have your notebooks open, and just modern educators have demonstrated, researched, it helps if you want to retain something, you write it down while you're sitting in class. If you write it down, because one of the things that you have to formulate the language that captures the essence. And you become practiced at that, and your listening tunes into the essence, because you have to do that because you have to write it down. And then another thing is you share with somebody else, that also strengthens your retention. So even if there's something new, write it down, discuss it with others, and then, you know, the final is you apply it in your life. Because although this is philosophy, it's relevant philosophy. It's, you know, how to specific for the section that we're going to be discussing, to become thoroughly convinced that the practices that we're doing, specifically chanting and reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is the best approach to realize the self and to realize the Supreme and our relation with Him. It's the best. How do we know that? Listen carefully. You know how we know that, because Jiva Goswami lays it out. Okay, so now you see on the screen, this is interesting. I'm over here, the screen's over there, so you keep looking over there, although I'm over here. Anyway, we heard towards the end of the Mangalacharna prayers these two words, paryayam, paryayam, systematic arrangement. Jiva Goswami used this word in relation to the manuscript that he received from Gopal Bhatta Goswami about ideas from the Bhagavatam that he had written since childhood about others' views about transcendence, the Bhagavatam's refutation of those other views of transcendence with the references from the Bhagavatam. So he took that in its rough form and systematically organized it. He said he did that. So it's systematic. And in Gopi Pranadanda's translation, he uses this word, you know, I commit myself to this encyclopedic presentation. That's Gopi's words. I don't know what the Sanskrit word is connected with encyclopedic. I looked for it, I couldn't find it. But when we use this word encyclopedic, what does it mean? Is that that's the comprehensive thing? You know, encyclopedia is like Google. It knows everything about everything, or has something to say about everything, whether it's right or wrong. Like a New Yorker, they have something to say about everything. And some of them think they're authorities in anything. Just ask them. So, encyclopedic, comprehensive and systematic. So now, whoops, our Prabhu with the screen just went away. Well, I'll tell you what it says until they come up with it. This word, sandarbha, this is the Bhagavat sandarbha. This is the six sandarbhas. Sandarbha, one of the meanings of sandarbha is weaving, like cloth. You know, otam and protam, the words of Sanskrit, you know, the warp and the weave. You take this thread and that thread and put them together, you get a cloth. Right? So take this verse and that verse and you put them together and you get a comprehensive and systematic exposition on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. That's what sandarbha is. And what's the sandarbha about? It's about Bhagavat, about Krishna, the Supreme Person, who has unlimited inconceivable potencies. Remember those two things? Because it's going to come up again. The Absolute Truth is a person. Bhagavan conception means person. And person means potencies. And Bhagavan's potencies are unlimited and inconceivable. So part of this comprehensiveness of the sandarbhas is we're going to hear a lot, particularly in Paramatma Sandarbha, or if one who studies it, a lot about the energies that make up creation. Material nature. Time. Fascinating. One of my favorite fascinating topics is time. Very fascinating description in Paramatma Sandarbha about time. If you have time, you can read about time. Pun intended. Okay, so what to speak of a good teacher that knows Paramatma Sandarbha. So the intention of Jiva Goswami is to present a core treatise of the teachings of the Sampradaya. He's a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his worshipable master and lord. Jiva Rupa Goswami is his spiritual master who he has taken complete shelter of. So he, receiving from Rupa the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wants to present this comprehensive and systematic core teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the same time, it's a thematic study of the Bhagavatam. Thematic in the sense that it's topic by topic, as opposed to canto by canto. It's not necessarily organized by topics. There's canto headings, but the very nature of Srimad Bhagavatam is it's non-linear. It's not, you know, over here is this bucket, and over here is that bucket, and over there is the, here, there's 10 topics, and everything in this bucket is about this topic. Everything in that bucket. It's not like that. Not organized like that. Jiva Goswami is taking those selected verses with the instances of Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and taking the appropriate topics and expanding on them. One of the very last books, this is related, but it's not essential. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote 100 books. They weren't as long and voluminous. He wrote a lot of books. And one of the final books he wrote was similar to this, but it was just verses without explaining them. The title was Bhagavat Arka Marichimala. So a string of verses that give the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's topic by topic, and it's a lot of topics. And then there's subtopics under those topics, and there's verses that illumine those subtopics. And at the end of the book, he reveals something. He said Srup Damodar came before him and asked him to write the book. And told him how to write the book. Srup Damodar is one of the two most intimate associates of Rupa, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said he gave him a very special explanation of the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I simply have presented what Srup Damodar has said. So, the Bhagavatam covers everything. So, a thematic study of the Bhagavatam, these two things, and the core treatise of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So now, the next slide that you can't see is covering again the topic of what does Sandarbha mean? Because this little bit, this is a refresh. Because after all, it was 7 hours ago that we discussed this. And this is Kali Yuga, and our memories are very short. So one of the meanings of Sandarbha, just from the previous slide, is it means weaving or stringing together. Like this Bhagavat Arka Marichimala. Stringing together verses that then express there we go. They express the Bhagavatam's message. And then we also heard this morning, very similar, almost copy of the text we saw this morning, where Jiva Goswami says there's five parts to a Sandarbha. It elucidates a deep subject matter. It focuses directly on essentials, meaning details may not be all details are not addressed, but essentials are the focus. Excellently composed, conveys various complex ideas and is readily understandable. So that's what a Sandarbha is. Now, so this is the Bhagavat Sandarbha. And in Jiva Goswami's, just step back from the whole exercise of writing the Sandarbhas, all six of them, he had an objective. And Sri Radhika picked up on one of them, you know, this faithfulness to one's school of philosophy. And as we, if you remember from this morning, it's not just etiquette to do so, it's a spiritual principle to do so. So Jiva Goswami wants to do what anyone from any sampradaya wants to do. They want to demonstrate that their teaching is the highest. They're obliged, and they want to demonstrate. And so Jiva Goswami had a very specific strategy. How to do that? And it's very simple and very straightforward. And the first part of the strategy is to show that Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana. We're going to hear more on that term just now. What does pramana mean? It is a valid source of knowledge. Pramana. Or means of knowing something. He wants to know Krishna or glorify Krishna, because that's what he said at the invocation mantra. But before glorifying Krishna, what's the best way of knowing the subject, Krishna? So Srimad Bhagavatam is that best source. That's what we're spending time together now, this holiday weekend. The Pramana Kanda section. So then the next takes, you know, the other five canto, other five Sandarbhas. And that is, Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. You know, they're equal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. So what's the third one? It's deductive logic. It's very logical. Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana. Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Therefore, what? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is the highest. Is it logical? That's a strategy. Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest. Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is the highest. That's his strategy. And in 26 verses, actually, you know, 9 through 26, but, you know, the Mangalacharna is essential in order to receive the other one. So, in 26 verses, he's establishing this first item. And the rest is huge. That's the task of systematically and comprehensively, A to Z, nuts through bolts, that the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Yeah, it's very comprehensive. Covers a lot of ground. A lot of tattvas, a lot of truths about Krishna. And then the third one is then automatically understood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is the highest. Okay, so that's our project, Jiva Goswami's project, and we're taking the first one of those. And we're entering into now Tattva Sandarbha Pramana Kanda. Kanda means section. The section that deals with Pramana. Again, just so that you get used to hearing the term. What does pramana mean? It means the means of knowing something, or the source of valid knowledge. And if you like, you know, fancy words, epistemology. Look that up in your dictionary, epistemology. And that's what it'll say, the means of knowing something. So, as we showed in the outline, and pages 2 and 3, there's sections that are parts of this Tattvasandarbha. And section 2 is, it runs from 9 through 18, and it's establishing that Srimad Bhagavatam is the supremely authoritative source of knowledge. And there are many steps to that, or subsections. And so we'll start with subsection A. The Vedic literatures are the best evidence. And Prabhupada was not shy to speak about this. In fact, as we move along here, 1969, in Conway Hall in London, at the end of Rath Yatra in London, the first Rath Yatra, they had the, you know, the parade in Trafalgar Square. They had a big, huge festival in a big hall, and Prabhupada spoke about this topic. 1969, to, you know, who knows what was in the audience. You know, what that had smoked or eaten or drunk or whatever. And he is describing this teaching. So you people are, you know, you're nice Vaishnavas. You're very sober folks. So listen very carefully to this nice description. Text 9 refers to text 8. So four topics. No. If you have a copy of this nice Gopi Pranadana's finely published version, you'll see, if you look, compare what's in his book to what's on the screen, some words are different. And the reason some words are different isn't because the typist didn't know what he was doing, meaning me, but it's because there were, prior to its being published, there were versions that were digitally available, and I referred to some of them. And some of them I kept the exact wording of what's in the book, so don't be surprised if, hey, what's going on? It's not the exact same wording. Don't worry about it. The message is there. Okay, so from the previous verse, text 8, the last of the Mangalacharna verses, Jiva Goswami fulfills the mandate of what a Mangalacharna is supposed to do. What's that? He covers these four topics. What's the subject? The connection between the words and the book itself. Service to Krishna as the means. And pure love for Krishna, that's the goal or purpose to be fulfilled by the, you know, the reader of the book. So then the verse reads, this is still just a translation of the verse, before we can elucidate these topics, especially, you know, talk about Krishna, because he's the topic, he's the subject of the book, we must first settle the question of pramana, the reliable means of ascertaining facts about Krishna. Human beings are bound to have four defects. This is what Prabhupada spoke about in 1969 at the end of a Rath Yatra. What's that? The defects of the conditioned soul. Subject to delusion, make mistakes, tend to cheat, and have imperfect senses. Thus, their direct perception, inference, and so forth, we'll hear more about direct perception, inference, and so forth as we go along. These are pramanas. Direct perception, inference, and so forth. The so forth is shabda pramana. or that valid source of knowledge from a good source. So these are defective because the four defects of the conditioned soul, and especially when we're looking what's beyond material reality into spiritual reality, that's where Krishna resides, they cannot enter there. So that's text 9. Conditioned souls have defects, 4 in number. The common means of trying to gain knowledge by direct sense perception and by reason are fallible because of those 4 defects. So they can't enter into knowledge about Krishna. They're not valid sources of knowledge of facts about Krishna. They're not good pramanas. That's the verse. That's like a little summary of the verse. So now he goes into some detail. In the, those of you that have a book, you can read along, and if you don't have a book, you can just listen. It's just as well to listen. I'm going to read the first paragraph because Gopi has explained this very nicely after 11 years of preparing himself. So this is the first paragraph of commentary to text 9. After invoking auspiciousness in the Mangalacharana, the author, Jiva Goswami, is next expected to justify his work by stating how it fulfills the 4 prerequisites. If you remember from this morning, Anubandha Chatushtaya, those 4, the subject or Vishaya, and then the others. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, but not in our conventional way of thinking of those terms. The author should first demonstrate, so he's declared he's going to do these things now. The author should first demonstrate that his book has a specific, well-defined topic. He stated what it is, the Vishaya, that's Sri Krishna. And Sri Krishna in his Swayam Bhagavan form, his original Swayam Rupa form. That's the subject. Then, to convince the reader that his book will deal with the subject adequately, he should show the connection, sambandha, between the topic that needs to be described, vacha, and the words he proposes will do this, vachaka, vacha-vachaka sambandha. Remember that from this morning. You'll see it again in just a moment. He should also indicate that the practical method or abhideya that he'll provide to enable the reader to realize the subject. Now this is very important because it's not just philosophy that is philosophy for philosophy's sake. Here's the Anubandha Chatushtaya, and you don't have to read it because we already discussed it. We just read it from the purport also. In Greek philosophy, the very word philosophy means love of knowledge. You know, Socrates was a philosopher, a lover of knowledge. And lovers of knowledge don't necessarily have an objective other than love of knowledge. One such philosopher Prabhupada had an interaction with when he was in Germany in 1972, and his name was Professor Durkheim. And Professor Durkheim, shows his name here, every morning, or a number of mornings, he went on morning walks with Prabhupada, and one morning, Professor Durkheim was praising Philosophia, knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada was disagreeing. No, not knowledge for knowledge's sake. There must be a practical purpose for that knowledge. You apply the knowledge, not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. And back and forth and back and forth, and Prabhupada finally lost patience with the man and let him have it. And his explanation was that the application in Vedic system is self-realization. To know who you are. And to know who you are requires also knowing who you're not. Relieving yourself from misconceptions. And so that you can live a life in relation to the Supreme Truth. Truth of the self is for that purpose. So philosophy has a purpose. Professor Durkheim liked the explanation. He didn't argue after that. So the point I'm making here is that in the Vedic system, it's called darshan, like, you know, the six darshans. There's a purpose behind them because it's Vedic, knowing the self. And then there's a means by which you can know yourself, and there's things that you will experience when you know yourself. It's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. So there must be a means of realization, and there must be a description of what that realization is. So you know when you're there, and you'll understand, you'll be encouraged to go there. Like a travel advertisement. Go to such and such place, because here's what it's like there. So these are requirements in the Mangalacharna, and then he's making some promises which then need to be fulfilled. So now, what's Jiva Goswami doing in this verse? He wants to establish an infallible means of acquiring knowledge about transcendence. And the first thing he said, Jiva Goswami, is the same thing that Prabhupada said at Conway Hall in 1972. And the transcription of that, by the way, is the introduction to Sri Isha Upanishad. Those of you that have read Sri Isha Upanishad will know that's true. So there are these four defects in human society. Prabhupada begins in that, 1969. And he's speaking to a public audience saying, speaking about knowledge, and the Veda, the word Veda has various meanings, but in general it means knowledge, and there's ways of acquiring knowledge, and you can't acquire knowledge, real knowledge, by defective means. And then he outlines these four. He doesn't use the Sanskrit terms, but he gives examples. He uses Gandhi as, you know, makes a mistake. He was warned. There's a threat for your life at this public gathering. Please don't go. And he went. And sure enough, he made a mistake. He lost his life. That was a pretty big mistake. So B-H-R-A-M-A is the first of the four defects. That means makes mistakes. Jiva Goswami says there's two kinds. One is mistaking the body to be the self. That's a big mistake. And then there's another, is when we think that we perceive something that is a fact that is not a fact. Like a mirage. Or a hallucination. Or a hologram. Now it's just... In this month of October, I was in Wada, Govardhan Echo Village. Devikinandan, have you ever been there? You went there once. It's very hot. Very perspirational. 95 degrees and 90% humidity. and no air conditioning, having meetings. It was very interesting. So one of the things that during those meetings was a devotee that's working with the Mayapur Temple of Vedic Planetarium, and he's hit one of his areas of responsibility is exhibits to go inside. There's an exhibit hall or area in the Nrisimha Temple area. So one of the things that he was showing us images of was holograms, and technology is really advanced with holograms, and he showed a little video clip of Prime Minister Modi. He's Prime Minister, right? Part of what he did to get elected was he went to various places via hologram. What? No, there was, you know, they have, the technology is now so advanced. There's a stage with, you know, big audience, you know, his admirers, potential voters, and a little table and a chair, and the hologram comes walking in, offers a bit, you know, with folded palms, sits down in the chair, and speaks. And everybody applauds when he speaks, and then he stands up and walks off the stage. And that way he was in, you know, in his hologram form, you know, in 50 places at the same time, all across India. I didn't know that. I learned about it in Govardhan Echo Village in October. So a hologram is not the person. But people voted for the person because they liked what the hologram had to say. So, anyway, that's anecdotal. That's an example of BHRAMA. You mistake something to be real when it isn't real and vote for it. Anyway. Or a mirage. It appears to be something, but it's not what it appears to be. So accepting the body as the self, or accepting something to be real when it isn't what it appears to be. That's mistakes. The example that Prabhupada gives is in Mahatma Gandhi getting assassinated. Then the next one is pramada. Pramada. Pramada literally means very mad. Mada and pramada. But literally, it means inattention. Just like it's one of the offenses in the 10 offenses, it's also it's an offense to be inattentive when chanting the holy name. The term that's used is pramada. So this error or defect of the conditioned soul is when you're doing something, the mind is elsewhere. So the object is there, but you don't perceive it because your mind is elsewhere. You know, like you're looking for your car keys. You know, you look and you look and you look and can't find your car keys. You go back and you look again and you look and you can't find. Somebody comes along and says, there they are right there. Oh, I didn't see them. That's pramada. Where the mind is not connecting with the object of perception. Like inattentive while chanting. So it's inattentiveness. So the correction is attentiveness. But conditioned souls have this tendency, defect, tendency, pramada. Then the next one is, not very nice one, it's vipralipsa, which is cheating propensity. Even you see something, you report it differently. Cheating, no, lying. No. He goes on, Jiva Goswami in his commentary says, when we're wishing to attain material happiness and we are not attaining material happiness somehow, we cheat to try to improve our chances to get enjoyment from material happiness. We're cheating ourselves. Vipralipsa. And imperfect senses. You know, the Sanskrit term is karana patava. You know, the classic is you look at the sun in the sky and it looks like a small disc, but it's many millions of times bigger than the earth planet. So imperfect senses. And the conclusion of this four, I put in bold letters at the bottom, these four defects, it's the premise of, or the cornerstone of entire Vedic epistemology. Certainly a Vaishnava epistemology, but Vedic. All of the Vedas say you can't know about even material things properly. What to speak of transcendence? Because of the defects of these four defects of the conditioned soul. I'm pausing, so let it sink in. Because from this, the next is Prabhupada gives this example like a lawyer builds his case. Jiva Goswami is doing that. He's taking scriptural reference and he's building his case. And the case is, where the train is going, is the Vedas are the proper source. Shabda Praman is the best. And then amongst Shabda Praman, Aparusheya Shabda, the non-human kind of Shabda, because there's another kind, there's humankind of Shabda. We'll go there in a moment. So the conclusion, because of these four defects, getting reliable knowledge, even about material objects, is not going to take place. What to speak of transcendental subjects? It's impossible. And so we need some other source. We're ready to go to what's that other source? Again, look at the headline. Jiva Goswami wants infallible means of acquiring knowledge. That's pramana. So now here's a dictionary definition of pramana. Pramana. So prama means valid knowledge. And pramana means a way of acquiring that valid knowledge. So synonyms, your thesaurus might say proof or evidence or authority, pramana. Now I'm going to go to the bottom here, and the Vaishnava epistemology or study of this science of how do you know things, it says that although there's different schools that have different ideas, Jiva Goswami follows Madhvacharya in accepting three as acceptable means of acquiring knowledge. Sense perception, reason and logic, and Shabda Praman, or revealed knowledge. Now we use them just in discussing the Damodar Lila. Mother Jasoda used them. She used reason and logic in her service to Krishna. So we don't say don't use them. But what we do say, and what Jiva Goswami explains, is we use them to the extent that they're in agreement with Shabda Pramana. And if they disagree with Shabda Pramana, we accept the Shabda Pramana instead of the other two. It's the Supreme Court. And it overrules the lower court. Two examples that Prabhupada liked to give regularly. Cow dung and conch shell. You know the examples, those that have read Prabhupada's books. Cow dung is considered pure, but stool of an animal is considered impure. If you touch the stool of an animal, then you must bathe because you become impure. But you touch the stool of a cow, in fact, you can purify a place by applying cow dung because it's pure. Well, that's a contradiction. But because the Vedas state it, it's accepted. And sure enough, by, you know, hooray for the scientists, by studying the properties of cow dung, it has antiseptic properties. It's pure. Sure enough. So what we should not do is say, if science says it's true, then we accept the Vedas because science says it's true. It's the other way around. Maybe eventually science is going to get it together and correctly understand things that the Vedas knew all along from millions of years ago. Without too many examples. Another is, bone is impure, but a conch shell we use on the altar. But it's a bone. But the conch shell is pure. And sure enough, it's pure by scientific analysis. It doesn't have the diseases and germs, etc., that bones have. Similarly, anything that, because it comes from the Vedas, we accept it. And we apply reason and logic all the time, and we discount it or reduce its merit or just trash it if it is in conflict with Shabda Praman. Shabda Praman is the ultimate Praman. That's what Jiva Goswami explains. Now, I'm going to add something that's in the commentary here, because it's presented in Sarvasamvadini commentary by Jiva Goswami. It's in the back of this book. If you have one, you can read it. He goes through two other options. You know, there are other schools of thought in the world besides Vaishnava school of thought. One of them, and it's Vedic, is Nyaya. What does Nyaya mean? It's logic. The school of logic. It's one of the six darshans, and it has these systems that it follows. So anyway, here's what Nyaya says. Nyaya darshan says that pramana is an instrumental cause of true knowledge, or prama karana, and true knowledge is perception that agrees with facts. Sounds logical, because it's nyaya. Perception that agrees with facts. Of course, how are you going to determine what facts are? You're using reason and logic to analyze the perception. There's faultiness in that. Then, Jiva Goswami, because it was during his time, Buddhism hadn't totally faded out at that time. Here's what Buddhists say. No, there's no such things as things at all. There's no real things at all. In fact, there's no reality extending through time and space other than the raw phenomena of each separate moment, that's all that exists. And in the next moment, it's another raw phenomena, next moment. So be in the moment. It's one of their slogans. And what is truth? Truth is the capacity to inspire purposeful activity consistently. And that stage is enlightenment. And one who is enlightened becomes a Buddha. So you too can become Buddha. That's a goal. Fascinating. So there are different schools where there's different pramanas. So we'll go back now to what Jiva Goswami accepts. Following the line of Madhvacharya, there are these three, and let us discuss these three. What are the three? Direct perception, that's number one. And then reason and logic, or inference, anuman, and then shabda. So if you don't like philosophy, you can just like tune out right now. And just, you know, because where we're going is, the one that we're going to accept is shabda. This is just like why we don't accept the other ones. But hey, you know, it's Jiva Goswami's teaching, so we're going through it. Here we go. This is now taken from, not from this book, but from, you know, the earlier editions that you can get online at ISKCON Desire Tree. Directly perceiving something with our senses can be a means to either valid or invalid knowledge. But only that sense perception which leads to valid knowledge should be considered pramana. Sense perception is the principal means of acquiring knowledge in this material world. Both theistic and atheistic philosophers accept pratyaksha, that means direct sense perception, pratyaksha pramana, as one of the means of valid knowledge. Madhvacharya does too. Jiva Goswami does too, provided it is in agreement with shabda. Krishna says these things in Bhagavad Gita too. Direct perception is of two types, external and internal. And external perception occurs when we acquire knowledge through the senses, and an internal perception, we acquire knowledge directly through the mind, as when we perceive emotions such as pain, pleasure, love, and hate. In the Bhagavad Gita, 15:7, Lord Krishna lists the mind as the sixth sense. So it's a sense perception also. So now, here's some more information about pratyaksha. Its scope of pratyaksha is limited to the present moment of time. It can't extend to past or future, direct sense perception. And it's limited only to material things. Pratyaksha. And so, Jiva Goswami says in Sarvasamvadini, there's an exception to this. What's that? If you look at the very bottom, you'll see this Vaidusha Pratyaksha. Those of you that know a little Sanskrit, vid means to know. V-I-D. Vid means to know. So Vaidusha means belonging to someone who knows, or to a wise or learned person, like rishis, you know, like Narada Rishi, Narada Muni. You know, if Narada Muni says something, it's a fact. That's all it takes. That's all it takes, because he's a rishi. He doesn't have to. He sees because he has that capacity. In fact, the Vedic mantras that are used in yajñas, many of them were received in that way. They were manifested by rishis. They just turned their receiver on and they received mantras and then uttered them. There's a broadcaster, Narayana, and there's a receiver, the rishi, and then there's an amplifier, their voice. And they've vibrated. So if you don't have your receiver on, you can't receive, you know, television signals and radio signals and phone signals and all kinds of other signals. But if you have your receiver on, you can receive them. They're just like zooming through the room all the time. So there's, in shabda, in Vedic sound vibration, the rishis had the receivers. They were very qualified. They knew what frequency and etc. So he discusses this point. I'm not going to read the whole thing. There are verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says the same thing. In the 9th chapter, verse number 2, Krishna says, knowledge leads to direct realization of transcendence by experience. Here's this word, pratyaksha. Transcendental knowledge, knowledge of chapter 9, leads to direct perception of the self. Or, in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 21, Krishna assures Arjuna that the state of transcendental samadhi, a devotee acquires knowledge through purified intelligence and transcendental senses. This is this Vaidusha Pratyaksha. Have I lost anybody? Somebody's nodding. A purified soul like Narada Muni, or what to speak of Vyasadeva, they can receive, Lord Brahma, they can receive transcendental knowledge within the heart. And it's a valid source of knowledge. They're directly perceiving by that higher state of consciousness. That's a kind of pratyaksha that is acceptable, even for transcendence or for temporal things. It's an exception to the rule. The rule is pratyaksha, or direct sense perception, cannot give you valid knowledge. There's an exception. A perfected being can have direct perception of things that we can't have. That's the message. Okay. Then number 2 of 3 is Anuman. And what is Anuman? It's logical inference. Here's what he writes. It's based on generalized experience. Literally, anu means to follow. Anumana means knowing after. So there's some repeated experience, repeated experience, repeated experience, repeated experience, repeated experience, like objects fall. Gravity is a real force, whatever someone, you know, evaluates why objects fall. Someone jumps out the window, they're going to crash on the ground. It's a predictable event. something that's probable. Like, you know, the classic in Western logic is the three parts. It's called the syllogism. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is immortal. Logic. You're squinching your face. We don't know whether Socrates is mortal or not mortal, but most likely he's mortal. It's probable. Because all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. That's, you know, the Greek anuman, you know, logical inference. It gets a little more intricate, and I'm not going to spend much time on it because we're ruling it out anyways. But the Vedic system has 5 parts rather than those 3 parts. And it's from Nyaya. It's one of the 6 darshans. So if you don't like philosophy, just pretend that, you know, you're just sing a Hare Krishna melody in your mind and or something like that and tune out. And otherwise, for the rest of you, just go forward and discuss these points. Here's the five items. They're listed. And there's a proposition. So here's the classic from Nyaya. There is fire on the mountain. That's the proposition. And then, you know, at the end, it's the conclusion. It's the same. But, you know, that's the proposition. It seems to me that there's fire on the mountain. And then there has to be a reason. Well, there's smoke. And, you know, then there's the general rule. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And then you're supposed to also give a practical example of that, like in the kitchen. This is Nyaya, so it's like, you know, it's an airtight example. And there, you can see, because it involves sense perception, there, over there, there's smoke over the mountain. Therefore, there's fire on the mountain. Now, there could be some other causes. It's fallible. Supposing a number of things. Supposing there used to be a fire on the other side of the mountain, a big rainstorm came, and it put out the fire, and when you put out a fire, there's a bunch of smoke, and the wind blew it onto this side of the mountain, and now you see smoke on this side of the mountain. There's no fire. There was one on the other side. So there could be another explanation than this explanation. So reason and logic is fallible. But there are steps to it. And there's even, you know, these nice Sanskrit terms, which I'm not going to go into because we're going to reject it anyways. And it's like technical, and I get the sense we don't really want to get into technical stuff in this group. So, but here they are. There's a claim, something that is being stated. Like, you know, an example of that in the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. There's a statement. Now is the time to inquire about the Absolute Truth. It's just a statement. That's an example. Pratigya. And then in relation, there's this next term called hetu. Anyway, there's something that's observed. I see some smoke. And then there's this next one called vyapti. Vyapti appears up here also. Vyapti. That's invariable concomitants. Where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, if you saw some smoke pouring through the wall, this happened once in one temple I was staying. The smoke started coming through the wall. And I could understand there's an electric fire on the other side of the wall. I didn't see the electric fire. But where there's smoke, there's fire. I called Jitendriya right away. There's a fire in the wall. Better do something. So that's vyapti. And then you give an example, like in the kitchen. Then there's something observable. These are just rules of Nyaya. And then, you know, the conclusion. Yes. There's fire on the mountain, like that. So, by the way, although this is a little complicated, you'll find it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, not just in the Sandarbhas. And there's the reference. Whoops, there's the reference. In Adi Lila Chapter 7, we discussed in the morning session, that's where there's this talks with Prakash Ananda Saraswati. And everything you see on the screen about logic and reason, because that system was used also by Shankaracharya, and he presented his conclusions using this system, because it's a Vedic system. each of these terms, the very same terms you just heard and see up on the screen here, they're in that section. So if you want to go back and study it some more, write it down, look it up. And, you know, Prabhupada has already given us this stuff. Now, this next slide we're going to go through very quickly, and if you want to go through it in more detail than quickly, it's in the handout, page 4 through 15. Details that'll satisfy anybody that likes details. It's all there. There are 7 additional, Jiva Goswami says, there's 7 potential pramanas out there in the universe of potential means of knowing something. And we're going to very quickly go through them. Number 4 is Arsha. Arsha means sages said it. A classic is Charvak Muni. He was considered a sage, but what did he say? He said nonsense. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Make bower or steel, get ghee, because then you'll enjoy, because tomorrow you may die. He was a hedonist. Sage. And there's others that say other things and other things and other things. So it's a means that some people turn to for knowing things. A sage said it. Arsha. It's a kind of shabda, but it's, you know, not a purusheya shabda. Then the next one is upamana. Upamana means analogy or making a comparison. The nyaya comparison is somebody from the city is making a visit to the country, and that somebody in the country tells them about an animal called a gavaya that resembles a cow. But a person in the city has never seen a gavaya. But they heard somebody from the country say, there's gavayas, they look like cows, they resemble a cow. So he goes to the country and he sees this animal that looks like a cow, but it's not exactly a cow. So he reasons, oh, that must be a gavaya. It's a kind of knowledge. And, you know, we all have experience like that. You know, when you're told how to, so many things. You know, go buy a mridanga when you may not know what a mridanga is. Now, we all know what mridangas are, but, you know, something that you don't know what it is. Buy a lota. I won't explain the source of this, but one devotee was saying they asked one of the prabhus to go get a lota, and he brought back a flower vase. It was a college student in India, by the way. They know how to get A's in exams, but don't know how to tie their shoelaces or anything practical. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So, Arthapati is conjecture. It's negative logic. Negative reasoning. The negative reasoning classic from Nyaya is Devadatta is chubby, but he never eats during the day. So the negative inference is he must eat at night. You haven't seen him eat at night, but you see that he's chubby, and he says he doesn't eat during the day. So by negative inference, we can deduce. Then the next one is abhava. Abhava means non-existence. You know, here's an example. When I got back to where I'm staying at Premarnava's house, I was looking for my USB sticks so I could, you know, get ready to make the presentation and fix the thing because I wanted to add some things. But they weren't in my jacket pocket and they weren't in my kurta pocket. They're absent. So I deduced I must have left them in the place over here where they have projection. I didn't know for sure, but very likely, and sure enough, they were. That's where they were, fortunately. So you leave leave a glass of water, and the glass of water is gone. You leave your cell phone, your cell phone is gone. Somebody took the cell phone, or something like that. So by negative inference, okay? The non-existence of something, rather. So, again, these are in detail. Examples are given and so forth and so on in the handout. Sambhava is inclusion. Really simple. If you have $1 million, it's understood you also have $100 and $10 by the logic of inclusion. That's what sambhava is. Atithya is tradition. The right word. Aitya, tradition. When Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj gave his course on Tattva Sandarbha, he used the following example. It's a very good example. When you're in Vrindavan, and you go, you know, the little parikrama path around the Vrindavan town. There's a place just before Prabhupada's, you know, before the Krishna Balaram temple. It goes right by there. There's a well. And the local people will tell you, you can't just go on the street past the well. You have to go around the well. And then when you go around the well, you have to call down in the well, Radhe, Radhe, very enthusiastically. And if you don't do that, then your parikrama is incomplete. Now, it's a nice thing to walk around the well and say, Radhe, Radhe. But it's folk stories. And it's not that those are zero. There's some reason why they're there and they have some value. Like Krishna says, another example, is when Krishna sees this big yajna being arranged by his father, Krishna asks him, is this a family tradition or is this enjoined in the Vedas? Right? So that's a kind of, you know, because it's a family tradition doesn't mean you don't do it. But if it's enjoined in the Vedas, you must do it. And then you must know the reason behind it to get the benefit. So it's another means of knowing something is through tradition. And we're that's almost 10. That's number 9. Then comes number 10. Number 10 is cheshta, which means gesture. Like those of you that have been trained a little bit more details in deity worship, there are procedures of mudras. When you approach an article for worship, you show different hand figures or people that learn traditional dance. They're mudras or gestures with the hand or the position of Radharani. You know, some mudras or giving benediction or different things, right? So that's a means of knowing something. Cheshta. Gestures. You may say, you know, where's, you're looking for something. Oh, it's over there on the table. So it's a means of knowing something. So each one of those 7 are subsets of the 3. The 3 are direct sense perception, logic, or logical inference, and shabda. And we're almost done. So now, shabda, pramana, literally means sound. Shabda means sound. And it can also be written, sound that's written by a trustworthy person, apta purusha. Just like, just say for example, you have an airline booking for the day, and you want to know if the flight is going to be on time. So there's an apta purusha person. You call the airlines. You could ask the guy on the corner, or you stop for gas and ask the gas station guy, you know, is the plane going to be on time? But he's not the person that has that valid knowledge about, is the plane going to be on time? But there's somebody that does. It's their job. And they can only tell you what's in the computer. But, you know, if it's a good company, anyway, you get the idea. So there's worldly knowledge and worldly trustworthy persons. But those worldly trustworthy persons can't answer questions about transcendence. And Jiva Goswami wants to know about Krishna, who's in the realm of transcendence. So there's two different kinds. There's apurusheya and purusheya. Purusheya is somebody that knows something about a worldly subject. You know, I have a computer problem. I go to somebody who knows how to fix computer problems. But it's not that I would take my computer to Prabhupada and expect him to fix my computer because he's the knower of all things because he knows the Vedas. You get the idea. So that's the end of this little section. Text number 9 is Jiva Goswami is saying this apurusheya is therefore the perfect pramana. Why? Because it's free from the four defects of the conditioned soul. For Jiva Goswami, what happened? It's got a different screen than I have. Oh, I'm already on text 10. That's what happened. There we go. There's the last. For Jiva Goswami, Shabda Pramana is restricted to knowledge of the Vedas. Because it's apurusheya shabda. What are these two terms? Purusheya means a human being. Apurusheya means not a human being, like Krishna or Narayan or a pure devotee who is connected with Krishna. That's apurusheya shabda. We can trust that for valid knowledge. We're done. And then tomorrow morning, verses 10 and 11 expand on this, but it's essentially the same conclusion. The Vedas are the best means of knowing things. So let's just reconstruct it really quickly. And there's, we wish to know these four things. I, the author, Jiva Goswami, wish to establish these four things. I said I would do it, now I'm going to do it. Before I speak about the subject, Krishna, what's the best means of knowing Krishna? That's the question that's posed. So we're on the hunt or the search for valid means of knowing Krishna. Now then there's the four defects of the conditioned soul. So because of those four defects, even material things can't be known correctly, what to speak of transcendental things. So then we go into this other field of how you might try to know something, and through direct sense perception and through reason and logic, they're fallible. So that leaves me with one, and that's shabda. And those other seven are subsets of those seven, the three. So it's those three. Direct sense perception, reason and logic, and shabda, or sound vibration. And we want transcendental sound vibration from a perfect source. If you put it very simply, Prabhupada said, if you want perfect knowledge, Find a perfect person. That's Krishna. Ask Krishna, he'll give you perfect knowledge. Does somebody know where this little boy's mother or father is? Oh, right there. Okay. So that's a little summary. Krishna Priya, you got your hand up. You have questions? Okay. Do we have a microphone? Yes, here it comes. In the back. In the back. Raise your hand. There, good. Okay.
So Guru Maharaj, I'm a little confused about pratyaksha.
You're confused about what?
Pratyaksha. So if I...
Pratyaksha.
Yeah. So if I heard you right, you said that the only exception to pratyaksha is the sense perception of pure devotees who have transcended the four defects.
Because their senses are purified and they're directly perceiving Krishna because of
yes.
that.
Yes. But so far I had the understanding that as long as your sense perception and logic and inference is supported by Shabda Praman, it is okay because...
Yeah, we operate all the time. We have to live. We have to function. So we use our sense perception. I mean, you know, to get from Boston to New Jersey, you used your sense perception and your logic and your GPS. And you got here. You didn't just like look it up in the Bhagavad Gita. But you subordinated your power of sense perception and logic and reason to the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, hearing about Krishna. And otherwise, you know, you didn't or you wouldn't.
But specifically, I was wondering, like, I had this understanding that, like, even trying to understand the spiritual subject matters, it is okay to use our inference.
Prabhupada would say, try to understand. We're using our faculties of reason to understand. Now, if we don't understand, we should understand it's our faulty use of our power of reason, not there's something wrong with the Shabda. That was Sri Radhika's question about, you know, being independently thoughtful while at the same time faithful. Did that take care of it, or still something rumbling around over there?
So, if I heard you, I mean, you said the only exception is with the pure devotees. So,
Well, we're not pure devotees, but we can still subordinate our power of reason and logic, even in terms of understanding the scripture. It purifies. And another scriptural reference, Krishna says, one who studies the sacred conversation is worshipping me with their intelligence. Now, our intelligence doesn't get it. But we're still worshipping Krishna by our intelligence. Our intelligence becomes purified by applying that faculty of intellect to the subject matter. We're not speculating about it. We're trying to understand it. We're using our power of discernment and logic and reason. It's not conclusive, but we use it. We're told to use it. We're also told, don't speculate, but we're told to use those faculties.
Thank you.
Not just, you know, in other words, it's like one way to take a bath is you just stand there and the water pours over you. And then another is you engage with the water. And, you know, etc. So we do that. We engage with the subject matter of Shabda, trying to understand it, not just blindly accepting it. That's not the way to understand it. What do you think? Is that okay? All right. Yes? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5? Wow, it's after 9 o'clock. Go ahead.
So the progression of Jiva Goswami's conclusion to where he finally concluded is makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see, and I've experienced, where a person would say, so then how do you establish the superhuman portion? How do you know that?
We'll get there. It's okay, coming
so
now.
He does address
just now
it.
Coming. Okay. Coming attractions.
Hare Krishna.
Now, let me add to Krishna Priya's question. He's using reason and logic to say that reason and logic is insufficient. That's the next one. Number 10 says, he recognizes that. He points it out and says, now here's the Shabda that establishes and supports what reason and logic has concluded. Cool, huh? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, my question is, objectively there may be real knowledge available, but the accessing of the knowledge is what we are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
There may be scriptures and there may be pure devotees who carry that. I don't think Jiva Goswami is addressing the real issue is how does one access that knowledge, because those who have it, they already have it.
Well, first we have to know what it is. And then how you engage with it is part of the coming attractions.
The reason I'm asking this is, these persons who give the six darshans, they're all Vyasadeva's disciples.
They've got really good logic. And there's someone else that overrules that logic and so forth and so on. And they have their followers that say, wow, that's good logic. And it's not just those six, it's, the world is filled with people that have convictions in something. And Krishna, says in Bhagavad Gita, he makes their convictions strong from within their heart. So I understand what your question is, and I just have to say, initially, the effort so far, we just got started, please, is what is the valid evidence or valid knowledge? That's what prama. And pramana is the means of acquiring that. Prama. So he's saying it's shabda. So then how do you apply shabda? Your question is, how do you apply shabda correctly so that you actually can receive it? Not it's out there, but you can receive it. It's coming up. Good question. Hang on. Let's see if we get there. Yes.
Maharaj, I'm wondering whether I can ask Krishna Priya Mataji's question in a little different way. I somewhat was having a similar kind of question. When you showed that slide on exception to the Pratyaksha, it seemed to indicate as if that someone can claim to be self-realized without actually contacting the disciplic succession.
Yeah, there are cheaters. There can be somebody within disciplic succession that isn't Vaidusha, mm-hmm. Pratyaksha, and claim to be Vaidusha Pratyaksha. There are some people like that too. I can name some names.
So my question is that does that exception...
And that leads into his question too. Where's the realization of the real thing? Go ahead.
So I was wondering whether someone can take advantage of that exception that
sure,
is presented
they can
and actually...
Sure, sure. Present. It's the world of the cheaters and the cheated. It goes on. Yes, people can cheat.
But could there be bona fide cases where they don't need to actually go through the disciplic succession because Jiva Goswami seemed to indicate that you
No. That person who is the Vaidusha Pratyaksha person, a subset of their eligibility is their indisciplic succession.
Okay.
And one who says, no, I don't need it, that's an unqualified person, a fundamentally unqualified person.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Just pass the microphone around.
Guru Maharaj, so the... addition to that question is...
Look what you started, Krishna Priya.
So, how do we take Prahlad Maharaj? Because he got it directly from Narad Muni.
Who did?
Prahlad Maharaj.
Prahlad Maharaj.
He got the transcendental knowledge from Narad Muni.
Okay.
So, it is not like the... It is part of the disciplic succession, but not in the terms of, progression from one guru to the other guru. So,
why do you say that? What is it that you're saying? He received from Narada Muni, that's disciplic succession. He's in disciplic succession from Narada Muni.
Okay.
What's the problem? Maybe you think through your question a little bit more and
yeah.
You can ask the question when you've thought through some more. Pass the microphone back.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So, even Sabda Praman, it goes through our mind and...
That's a filter.
That's a filter. And I get Shastra, but I probably understand it the way I want to understand it. How do we resolve this? Especially, there's also the Divya Gyan Trutya Prakasito. How do you deal with... sometimes you feel something, but you don't know whether it is Krishna guiding you or whether it's your mind which is diverting you. How do we understand these two things?
You seek confirmation, Guru Sadhu Shastra. You can also see the degree of steadiness in the mood of humble service in devotion. That can give some indication of, is it the mind or is it Krishna? Right? Because if the signals from Krishna or indications from Krishna directly come to one who is pure in devotion, not so much one who is mixed in devotion. Anyway, you can, to keep it really short, you can assume largely it's the mind or mind filtering some light. So rather than, the moment of some inspiration such and such, we turn instead primarily to Guru Sadhu Shastra rather than be guided by the mind saying such and such temporarily. You follow the distinction I'm making? Trust in that which is very, very clearly transparent and be a little more cautious about trusting that which is not so very, very clearly transparent. You have to live with, the thoughts in your mind and the inspirations that you're carrying. Give them less weight than the higher one. And then you seek, guidance and good association from those not living your autobiography and ask for some feedback, verification. Okay?
How do you deal with the mind filter?
You tolerate it. Honest. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta said. Go ahead. That was it? Okay. Over in the corner? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, my question is also related to Vedyusha Pratyaksha. And if I got it right, the meaning was belonging to the learned or the wise. And I am thinking if this is kind of what I'm trying to say is, if a learned man, a kind of a revelation in his heart, that will be, for us it will be like a shabda, but for them that can be a pratyaksha praman.
Are you asking, is that a correct understanding?
In a way, yes. And I am having a hard time.
I hope you are, because it's not correct.
Because I am having a hard time taking that as an exception.
Well, the exception is truly an exception. It's not just somebody with a swagger that goes around saying, I'm deeply learned and I've got this realization. So look out, here I come. It means persons like Rupa Goswami, that's what he means.
I am thinking on that line only.
Okay,
I'm not
but you know, not, you know, so-and-so Prabhu over there in some such-and-such place, who's, you know, has, you know, very learned. It's not, so is he speaking of the Goswamis? That's what he's speaking of, such persons.
But whatever revelations they have, that becomes a Shabd Praman for us.
Yes, yes. It's like Prabhupada saying the writings of Narottam Das Thakur. That's scripture.
Right, and it's a category of a pratyaksha and being an exception.
Yeah. So, now you're making the statement that, if I've understood correctly, for us, it's Shabda. For them, it's pratyaksha. They're perceiving something. Yeah. And then they say it, then it becomes sound. Or they write it, and it becomes sound. It's like, here's an example. Srila Prabhupada would sit sometimes and just have disciples read. And he would sit for a long time, hours, and just hear the Bhaktivedanta purports and relish them. And say, you know, this is written by Krishna. So for him, then that was also became Shabda as well as Pratyaksha Praman.
Right, but then it should not be an exception.
Well, Prabhupada is an exception. I'm sorry.
No. I'm not
talking
about
that. If you write something
and
say, "Oh, Krishna must have written it," it's not the same.
No. My. What I meant is, Vidusha Pratyaksha should not be an exception. Then I got the Prabhupada's example. This should not be placed in the category of an exception. It should be a Shabda Pramana, and from them, it is a Pratyaksha. So there is no category of an exception.
I don't want to argue with you. You win.
I'm sorry, Maharaj. I'm sorry.
Behind you, she wants the microphone.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I was actually wondering in the last slide, you made a distinction between Shabda Praman into Paraship. Parusha Shabda and Aparusha Shabda, one of them being that there's the superhuman and the other one not being the superhuman, it's just one subject matter expertise. So are we not concerned with the one subject matter expertise because it seems like only the superhuman...
I got about 10%. Do it again slower.
Oh, sorry.
Slower, please.
Yes, Maharaj.
She works in Wall Street.
In the last slide, there was a distinction in Shabda.
The last slide, there was an issue about Shabda.
It was a distinction between Shabda Praman into Parusha Shabda and Aparusha Shabda.
Okay, Parusha and Aparusha. It's right there.
Right there. So my question was just, are we not concerned with Parusha Shabda since it's...
Are we not concerned with Parusha Shabda?
Right, are we not concerned with it?
We're concerned with it. If you want to catch the bus, you have to know what time it's coming.
Right,
we're concerned with it. We use it. We use it all the time. You know, you have a problem with the computer, you go to a Parusha Shabda guy that says, "Can you fix my computer?" We use it all the time. We're concerned with it insofar as it has relation to service to Krishna.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Jivana Jivana, it's the last question. You have the honor of the last question.
Flipping subjects here, Maharaj.
Hey, all right.
The cheating propensity. I really appreciated the definition. When we fail to attain material happiness to our full satisfaction, we take to cheating to improve our chances. So I was wondering if you could
elaborate on improving our chances.
No.
Can you give us some tips on how to... No, that's not what I meant, Maharaj. What is it you meant? How is it that we use... How do we get... We fall prey to the cheating propensity in that way? Is that what you want to know?
I think I understand it, but I'd like to hear more about this because it explains a lot within me.
It's like self-deception. There's deceiving others. That's one kind of cheating propensity. And there's deceiving ourselves. That's another cheating propensity. And, you know, we wish to be happy through fruitive activities. And it's not happening, and it's not happening. And the cheating propensity is self-delusion. We just keep trying it a different way and, you know, improving our chances for happiness through fruitive activities. When we really know it's not going to happen, we just keep, you know, we're cheating ourselves. And cheating our loved ones, those around us. Well, you know, we want companionship while we go down the path of cheating ourselves. And we want them to, like, pat us on the head or pat us on the back and hold our hand and make us feel good about cheating ourselves. You know, collective delusion. Normally, you know, the cheating propensity is we see, but we report differently. You know, like false testimony. Your Honor, I didn't do it. And all the evidence points to he did it. Or something like that. Or, you know, and more innocently, you know, ask your son or sons, ask them, you know, something. Did you just pull your brother's ear? No, I didn't pull my brother's ear. I would never think of it. That's one kind of cheating propensity. But then there's the self-cheating propensity. That's what that's speaking about. Self-delusion. We do have one more question. The last of the one more questions.
The topic here is how to approach the knowledge, not really where the knowledge exists.
No, it's where the knowledge exists. How to approach the knowledge is, that was Krishnasmarana's question.
Yeah, but I'm having doubt on that answer. All we are talking about is how can we approach? We can approach through senses, we can approach through Anuman, we can approach through Shabda. How do we approach? That's the topic.
Well, it's more than that, though. Because in one sense, yes, you know, there somewhere out there is real knowledge. Now, how do I get it? And I can try to get it this way, that way, or the other way.
Yeah.
Which is what you're saying.
Yeah. And my problem is that there is no conclusive answer to this.
There's no what?
I am not getting a conclusive answer of how to approach knowledge because the Shabda is tainted with imperfect senses. Even if I approach Shabda, I'm coming through my senses.
Okay. So his question about the filter of the mind.
Right.
So then there's, you know, the senses, which is the mind is the sense number 6. So you're correct to say, even there's Shabda, I'm going to be using my senses to try to acquire it or gather it or receive it. Which is, so it's correct, it's true. The good news is, the senses become purified by contacting that Shabda. The senses will not become purified by contacting the other kind. Just, you know, the sense and the sense object, period. Pratyaksha, that's minus Shabda. In our case, when we have Shabda, we can direct our senses, all even there, they're blunt, and they, at this stage, can only perceive material things, but we can, you know, it's similar to the very first question, actually, that, I can only perceive, it's just like, you know, seeing the deity or the holy name or the scripture or anything that's spiritual. In the clearing stage, we're seeing or interacting with that which is exactly as you're saying, that which is fully spiritual with blunt instruments that can only perceive material and only think of those things as material. You know, each one of the 10 is something that's spiritual. We're seeing it as material. The Vaishnava, the holy name, the spiritual master, the scriptures, the power of the holy name, the glories of the holy name, etc., etc., the purpose of the holy name. We're seeing in a material way. What you're saying is correct. That so the activity itself helps the cleanse, and having the right intention when doing those activities. The intention of purification, ultimately, the intention of being situated in my relationship with Krishna. When intention is focused, then attention goes to the right place. And then the mind and the senses can become purified, and then one can receive without the filters or the imperfect senses. That's the practice state, that's the sadhana stage, and then the ecstasy stage, and then the love of God stage, when then one can directly perceive. So we need purification to get there. And the means of purification is through shabda. Go ahead.
And this knowledge is also shabda.
Say it again. Knowledge is?
So, you know, this is how it went. I said, how can I approach shabda because I have imperfect senses? Your answer was, well, the senses would get purified. And my counter to that is, this answer is also shabda. What you are saying.
That's correct.
Right?
That's
so correct. It boils down to this, and let me know if I'm right or not. Boils down to this, that I have to put in faith. You cannot prove objectively, logically that
correct.
You are Krishna consciousness.
That's correct.
I have to try something in my life. Let me try Krishna consciousness.
Yes. There's the element of faith, regardless of whoever you are, whatever stage you're in. The atheist has faith. The theist has faith. The practitioner of sadhana has faith. Otherwise they wouldn't practice. And you know, and anything that we do, go from where we are right now to wherever we're going to go after this, there's faith, and there's something in that that's beneficial for me, and so I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this way. So now, the life of devotion is through association of devotees of Krishna, those that are carrying bhakti. My bhakti quantum has increased. Faith has been nourished and nurtured. And therefore, I'm with my intention determines where my attention goes, and I practice. And because of that, I'm becoming purified. Supposing someone doesn't have that intention. They're just passing by and they hear a kirtan or something like that. Their devotion has begun. It's like little, but it's begun. And then it can be increased through association. Just like we're doing this weekend. So the activity alone is insufficient to get the full realization, is my response to your question. Intention has to be active, directed towards Krishna. It's one of the 24 elements is chaita, or contaminated consciousness. Our contaminated consciousness needs to be directed. Now, part of what we're doing, like, you know, Sri Radhika's question, like, what's the objective here? To nourish the faith, so when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll hear it with greater attentiveness, because we know what it is. It's a means of giving Krishna, disclosing Krishna to us. Here I am. Krishna disclosing himself through that sound vibration. Now, as you indicated, back to the initial question, I'm not there. But Krishna's there. because our attention is elsewhere. That's this defect of the conditioned soul, pramada. Our attention is elsewhere. Because our intention is not so, by association and through sound vibration, that intention becomes more focused, or our attention becomes more focused, so we get more of the full benefit that's possible for us, and eventually the full thing, which is this Vaidusha Pratyaksha. When a pure devotee sees the deity, they see Krishna. When a pure devotee chants the holy name, they see Krishna. When a pure devotee hears the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, they see Krishna. We don't. We're practicing with faith. I think we have to end. I see the lights are going out. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.